Welcome to Fantasy Feud, a pitcherless baseball podcast where we're tackling the most relevant fantasy baseball debates each week. I'm Sarah Sanchez. I'm here with my co-host, Shelley Verstrate, to talk through both sides of the hottest fantasy baseball debates right now with some of the greatest minds in the industry. Y'all, it is May, and that means it's decision time for some of your guys. Who are you ready to drop? Who are you holding on to? Shelley, how are your teams looking right now in the middle of May?
Kind of middle of the pack. And like when you said it's going to be May, I'm like, why did you not, like, it's May. It's like, why didn't you say it's going to be May? Like the Justin Timberlake meme, which is probably way too old for maybe a lot of people who are listening to this right now, but I just find it funny. So my fantasy teams, they're kind of like middle of the pack. I started off the season like really, really bad, like basically at the bottom at most of my leagues. And then I shot up to like second, third, but then I've kind of settled down back to fifth. So it's been okay, but it's like, I still have a little bit of work to do. And you know, I'll get there at some point, but it's, let's just say it could be worse. So yeah.
Yeah. Most of my teams could be worse too. I'm sort of hovering between like fourth and 10th. I'm actually in the top 15 currently in the overall in the Earth Network. So I've been focusing a lot of energy there because there's a couple of places where I can see a clear path to making that happen. My pitching has been incredible in Earth this season. And I just got Justin Steele back and I held on to Paul Skenes, y'all. So I'm like, yeah. I'm about to boost my pitching, which I've never been in a situation where I was crushing pitching and about to add to it. So this is actually making me incredibly happy. Awesome. We are going to talk through all of it with a fantastic guest. We're excited to welcome Todd Zola to the show. You know Todd from his excellent work at RotoWire, ESPN, Masters Ball, Fantasy Index, and of course you hear him on Sirius XM Radio, where he's the co-host of some of my favorite fantasy baseball shows. He's also helping you out with Two Start Pitchers every week on the excellent RotoWire podcast, which is must listen for everybody in the industry. And he's helping us out in Tout Wars all of the time, running the tout table, just making the trains run on time. We're so excited to welcome you to Fantasy Feud, Todd.
Are we out of time?
You have a long resume, my friend.
It used to be longer. I've actually pared it down. All right, so first, Shelley, a Justin Timberlake meme is old.
I mean, at this point, that was
really old.
I feel old because I'm like NSYNC was like high school days, and I'm coming up on like near 20th anniversary of that. So old ish, yeah.
I'll see your 20 and raise you more than twice that. Anyway, so the other thing was you were talking about your teams being, you know, it could be worse. Hello, I'm worse.
Oh no.
Yeah, you know what? It's been kind of I've been in a rut for a few years actually playing, and it drives me, it irks me. It makes me, you know, it's frustrating, but yeah. We'll see, you know, we'll try to grind. We'll keep grinding. We'll try to get out of it. It's not last place everywhere, but it's not to the height that I wish it was. And I know there are reasons. We actually touch on some of them as we talk about some of these debates today, but yeah, I'm not the guy that people in the high stakes industry turn to how to win their leagues.
I don't know about that. I listen to y'all on the starting pitcher thing religiously, and I definitely heed your advice every week because I think y'all do an excellent job with that.
This is not what we're going to be debating today, obviously. But there's some people out there who insist that you win in order to give advice, and I think that's garbage. So I'm not, you know, that's a debate for another place, another time. We're here to have some fun with some players, and we don't need to get drowned down by that.
It is true. I think you win by process. And I think the process is one of those things you look back on and you see if you followed the steps that would have helped you get to winning. And you can't always predict what's going to happen, right? Like last year, I fell quite a bit short in tout after being in like first or second place for a couple of months. I was really excited to be hovering in the like top three range right there around like August. And then I lost Matt McClain and I couldn't make up the production I was getting from Matt McClain. There was nothing on the waiver wire that was going to be that like 2020 guy who was getting on base at a 350, 360 clip with all of the runs that you get from the Reds organization. Right. And I found myself falling behind. I kept grinding and I just didn't work out, but the process was good. Right. The process that got Matt McClain on my team was good. And the process to try to replace him was good. I just ran out of space on the waiver wire.
Well, I'm going to set the number of names I drop at 8 and the number of sirens that go behind me at 3. So if you guys listen to the show Sarah's talking about, you'll know what I mean. So I'm going to drop Rod Chandler, the fantasy expert. Did you guys read his book yet?
Of course.
So you saw the paragraph or whatever that he quoted me on. I truly believe that drafting a team, there, it's a skill unto itself. That it's a separate skill unto itself to assimilate and put together a winning baseball team. And some people, you know, maybe I should self-include it, can give some really decent advice on some of the tools and some of the background, but maybe isn't as adept at drafting as some other people. It's that, to me, that's a skill unto itself. And that's, you know, I need some work there, but, you know, even after all these years, I've had some success, but it's gone away lately. What am I doing different? What am I doing wrong? What aren't I adjusting to that the game has changed? And what am I still doing that is keeping my team worse?
These are deep questions. We're going to try to uncover some of the answers to these deep questions. There's some mini debates, which is how we do things here at Fantasy Feud. If you're new to the show, everybody gets 3 minutes to make their case. Their opponent gets 3 minutes to make their case. We do a little bit of a question and answer between the two. And then we end it with a rebuttal. And we will kick things off with a debate inspired by a recent tout table. If you read the tout table, which gets released weekly on Twitter, you know that Todd does an excellent job asking some great questions that get all of the touts thinking about their strategy and sharing some of their processes with everyone. Recent tout table looked at how to deal with slow pitchers out of the gate, and no pitcher has been slower out of the gate than AJ Puck. The Marlins tried to make him a starter. That did not work. The starting experience was a disaster. He put up a 9 ERA over 14 innings pitched, and he managed to walk 17 guys to a strikeout of only 12 guys. Terrible times. Luckily for AJ Puck, Tanner Scott hasn't been really great in his role as the closer. So there's some speculation that AJ Puck may just become a closer for the Marlins, although the last save situation after Puck was reinstated went to Anthony Maldonado. He blew that save. Here's my question for y'all. If you have AJ Puck and you were holding on to him in the hopes that he might get some saves, are you still holding on to him, or are you just going to drop him and call and look at the skills and be like, nah, I'm out? Todd, as our guest, we'll start with you.
Why, thank you. All right, so there's the addendum being, I'm not going to drop Puck right now and just pick up anybody. However, in leagues where we'll stick with the NFBC, TGFBI, Earth format, where there's seven reserves, no injured list, so you're only playing with seven spots, man, those spots are valuable. And I'm not releasing them just willy-nilly, but if I need to make a move and I need that spot to manage my team, I'm not going to hesitate to drop AJ Puck. The close saves, all right, he could be getting some saves, but you need fewer saves than you have in previous years. There are not as many, but there are pitchers available to get you some saves. A lot of bullpens are using, I don't know so much committees, but, you know, 1 and 1As. And in today's environment, you can use that 1A a lot more instead of a starting pitcher. So you can get a save or two here and there, and those two or three saves may get you 1 or 2 points. So I think the demand, the need for saves just isn't there. Puck is just guaranteed to stay healthy. We may be getting saves now, but the injuries, he's had injuries every year. You could be looking to replace him. If he gets hurt again, are you still keeping him? I don't know. I think so at this point, I'm going to say unless I'm desperate saves, I don't want to put that addendum. I need that roster spot elsewhere. There's too many other holes I need to fill. Stream starting pitching, backup middle infield. As soon as I need that spot, he's gone.
It's a really great point about the league rules and whether you have a spot, Puck's tendency to get injured, and the fact that you hopefully have some other guys who are getting you saves. However, as we've talked about on the show a few times, we're not always great at finding the guys to get us saves. Shelley, what's your position? If you have Puck, are you holding on to him in the hopes you'll get some saves, even if those saves come with an awful K-minus BB rate?
Yeah. As someone who did draft Puck, I think in TGFBI and maybe some other 15-team league on the NFBC site, I held him because I was a bit lucky, like when he went on the IL eventually, initially. That I had some like wiggle room, wiggle room. Wow. that was really hard for me to say. On my seven player bench. Now it's a little bit more tighter because obviously more players have come, have gone on the IL. But something that I have struggled with throughout playing fantasy baseball is getting enough saves. And I just remember last year in this is a 12-team OC that did finish in the top 25 overall in the NFBC OC, RotoWire OC. The biggest thing that kept me just down in the pack was lack of saves. And I kept looking at Trevor May last year. Again, he was getting saves and AJ Puck is not getting saves currently. But I kept looking at Trevor May for like 2 or 3 weeks. No one would ever pick him up because, again, he was the closer for the A's, whatever. And honestly, if you look at his ratios, it wasn't really that worse than what AJ Puck is currently doing. Low strikeouts, high walks, but he did end up getting saves. So if I am in a position that I really, really need saves, I'm going to hold on to Puck until it makes me say, yuck, and I have to drop him. But I think I'm going to hold on to him just a little bit longer just to see what happens with the Marlins. I mean, I know that there's Tanner Scott there and they aren't really a good team, but I don't know. I'm probably going to hold him maybe a little bit longer than Todd would.
I mean, it is interesting what you said about you got to just hold your nose and hope for the saves if you're looking for one of those overall categories. Todd, I'm curious, when you look at Puck, if you are desperate, and you mentioned that, like, if you're desperate for saves, like, obviously this goes a little bit out the window, but I have some skill concerns here. Like, I'm just not sure the Marlins can even trust him in a high leverage situation if he's walking more guys than he strikes out. How do you feel about the skills underlying Puck, and is that driving your decision to drop him?
To be honest, it's not even an AJ Puck thing. In order to make the saves useful, I need to have the rest of my team doing well. And I need that roster spot to help me. Maybe it's my style of drafting where I want to stream back and starting pitchers and try to find a fourth or fifth outfielder or middle infielder off the waiver wire. And I just want that spot to be able to do it. But as far as asking the question about AJ Puck, I think he's going to bounce back. I think one of the reasons that he was A, drafted, and B, picked up by Miami is he's got that fallback of being a closer. That's a pretty big safety net. And I think, again, that's probably why Shelley probably drafted him, even though he's going to start early, because, well, if he doesn't start, I'm going to get some saves. And I think Miami has that same feel. And I think it's just he didn't pitch long enough in the role, a lot of the numbers you quoted were from starting. He hasn't shifted to the bullpen and shown what he can do there. And I expect good things. I just don't know that I can wait and hurt my roster elsewhere in the interim.
It's important what you say about the NFC format in particular and how it puts that pressure on you. I mean, there are always guys that I wish I could hold on to who are hurt or maybe working through a thing, and you just can't. Like, you don't have the extra roster spots to do it. Shelley, how long are you willing to wait and see on Puck in the hopes that he might give you 10 saves in the second half?
Again, it depends on, like, when injuries hit, because I lost, who did I lose? I lost Ke'Bryan Hayes this week. I lost, like, a couple other players this week. And I'm just like, yeah. So I went from having like one IL stash, two IL stashes, and then AJ Puck came off, to having like three or four IL stashes in a seven player thing. Then you're like, I don't know. So yeah, it really honestly depends on how the injuries fall on your team is how long I would be willing to let him kind of be on my team while he's producing what he currently was doing as a starter. And I don't think that, like Todd said, I don't think that he is going to do that, you know, when he's out of the bullpen.
Awesome. Do either of you have any questions for each other, or are we good to move on to rebuttals?
I will have questions later, but I think I'm good now.
Cool. Looks like Shelley is good as well. So Todd, you get our first 1 minute rebuttal.
I mean, it kind of may have stated the case already. This is not an anti-Puck thing. And sure, there's no right or wrong in this particular. Well, is there right or wrong to any of them? Maybe. But a lot of it has to do with management philosophy, team management philosophy, approach, et cetera. And for me, it's just the way it works out. I understand saves. It's hard to get a closer. If I don't get the closer, I'm in eighth and not third or whatever it might be. But if I don't manage my roster, if I don't find a starting pitcher, if I don't replace another player with one of those roster spots, it doesn't matter if I got my 10 saves. My team's not going to be there at the end anyway.
That's a great point. And also, you know, saves are one of those things you can punt, especially if there's not an overall component. So I do want to just flag, like, the overall changes, how valuable those saves are.
It was a couple of years ago. I think it was the auction championship. Someone was won the overall, and it was the overall by punting saves. So it's really, really, really hard. And I don't know you can do it in the overall draft leagues, but in an auction league where you can put your assets to other categories a little easier, you know, I'm not going to never say never. But anyway, it's just kind of an aside. Hopefully that doesn't count into Shelley's time.
No, it does not. Shelley still gets a full minute. Your rebuttal time, Shelley.
Yeah. Like everyone has been saying for years, saves are hard to come by. So if you have someone on your roster and you also need save, let's just say you don't have like Kyle Finnegan and whomever's else is like leading in saves. If you didn't look out to get those guys, and I'm not saying that Kyle Finnegan is great either, but if you're kind of like in the middle to low pack, and if there's some guy who can make you go from ninth to sixth or fifth, that's a lot of points there. So yeah, if you need the saves, stick with him, hold your nose, maybe bench him, see how he does, and kind of see what Miami does. But yeah, just look at your team. But yeah, I'm probably going to be holding AJ Puck just for a little bit longer.
Man, Kyle Finnegan. I have so much Hunter Harvey this season because I was sure Kyle Finnegan was losing that job. And I'm just like, I'm just staring at Hunter Harvey in saves only leagues. Like, what are you doing for me? Not very much. All right. That was a great first debate to kick us off. Shelley, it looks like you're moderating debate number two.
Yeah. So we're going to go to the hitter side of this, of people who are just stumbling out of the blocks, right? Brandon Drury had a breakout season in 2022. And was also, you know, pretty decent in 2023. He went in the 14th round of most drafts. And, he also gives you multi-positional eligibility. He has first base, second base, CI, MI. It's just like one of those guys that you were like, ooh, I can put in multiple spots. Great. However, 2024 is just really, really, really bad. He's hitting just 173 across 113 plate appearances so far with just one homer. He just hit the IL with a hamstring issue that he's been dealing with for a couple weeks. And I'm just kind of interested to hear what you guys think, because I mean, I know what I did with Brandon Drury in the leagues that I had him. But yeah, so we'll go with Sarah for this one. All right, what are you doing with Brandon Drury?
All right, I understand why everyone is frustrated. I also understand why you drafted him. Brandon Drury is a big reason that I was able to pull out a win in Glarf in 2022. I picked him up off the waiver wire as a guy that I thought I was just going to stream for a couple of weeks, and he was so good that I just held on to him the entire season. He saved me in that league. Here, what I see with Brandon Drury right now is actually a guy who is getting tremendously unlucky. And I am willing to wait a little bit if I have the roster spot to hold on to him to see if that luck turns. There's a couple of reasons I think this. His max exit velocity is actually still pretty good. It's like 113.7. He's still capable of hitting the ball hard. He's just not doing it very regularly. His BABIP is currently 216, and that is just uncharacteristically bad for Brandon Drury. This is a guy who has put up a 315 BABIP for most of his career. So he's getting tremendously unlucky on batted balls in play. And I think that might partially be the reason that we're seeing a 34 WRC plus from him right now. That is so out of line with what he has done for the last three seasons. Remember, Brandon Drury's breakout was in 2022, but before that, he put up a 112 WRC plus in partial playing time with the Mets. And then he put up a 114 in 2023 with the Angels. We now have two plus seasons of Brandon Drury being a pretty good baseball player. and we have 113 plate appearances of him scuffling. That looks like bad luck to me. It doesn't look like a guy that I should punt on. And that multi-position eligibility can be so important. Look, if you're somebody, we've got some of these guys we're going to talk about later. If you're somebody who's missing your Tristan Casas right now, or you're missing a third baseman because you lost Ke'Bryan Hayes, Brandon Drury is a guy who can slot into either your middle infielder slot or your corner infielder slot. He's a guy who can play so many positions for you. I try to hold on to those guys as long as I possibly can, and you don't want to be missing out on the good Brandon Drury that's hopefully on the other side. The last thing I'll say, his K rate is actually down this season. It's at 19.5%, and he's still walking. So give it another couple of weeks, y'all. Maybe he turns it around in May.
Yeah, hopefully. So, Todd, why do you think it's Brandon Drury instead of Brandon Drury?
Well, first, I mean, turn around to what? All right, I agree with everything you said, except for the use of the word scuffling, but we'll get to that later. the numbers are fine. The numbers the past 2 years are very level, but they're nothing exciting. They're not exciting enough for me that I have to hold on to Brandon Drury to get those numbers. I think I could use that roster spot now and try to find a middle. Well, all right. The multiple eligibility is really good. That's really cool because you could – it kind of hurts my argument a bit because I don't know what position I'm replacing. You already replaced him once on your roster with a reserve with eligibility. But the point being, it's not exciting enough for me to not use that spot to take a chance and try to find someone just as good, if not better, than Drury. I'm confident enough that I think I could find that. And we don't know when he's coming back. We don't know if – if he'll continue to get hurt, hamstrings, it's not the first occurrence. This is a little technical, but the ball is not flying as far as it normally – well, I don't say normally – as it has in the past. And Drury falls into that zone where the extra 2, 3, 4 feet really hurts him. It's not a linear application. You don't lose home runs linearly. There's a spot where – they really plummet, and that's kind of where his fly ball distance is. So I'm concerned that he loses some home runs. We expect mid-20s. If he comes back now, we got 18, 19 more. I don't know if we're going to get those. Not to mention the team context. It's just the runs in RBI. You never know. There are always instances of – this is how old I am, Shelley. There was Delmon Young a few years back at like 20 homers and like 140 RBI. There's always somebody that last year, the entire Rangers team, I think, was out of whack with homers versus runs. But the point being, on paper, production should not be that great for Drury. So I don't think he doesn't have that sizzle that I want to hang on to. All right, he's going to get better. He's going to be what he has the past couple of years. I wasn't really interested in drafting that this year.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Sarah, what do you think about like what Todd said about the team aspect? Because we know Trout is going to be out for a little while longer. He just had surgery on his knee. And again, the Angels are just not winning games. So what do you think about the team aspect whenever he does come back from this hamstring injury?
Look, the Angels are not great, and the best reason I can tell you to draft Angels right now is that they are running a lot and stealing bases, and that is not really Brandon Drury's game, and it's certainly not his game with a hamstring injury. So I totally agree that this is not an ideal team context. That said, and I just pulled up my TGFBI league mainly because I think that's a pretty standard 15-teamer. It's not like it's not as nearly as competitive as, say, a main event or something like that. A lot of these guys, you would probably kill for them to be available.
I disagree with that.
In a main event, but this is the guys I could put at a corner spot in TGFBI right now who are available. Gavin Sheets, worst team context for sure, but maybe a slightly better player than Brandon Drury, especially if you need power. Tristan Casas, who we're going to talk about later, obviously he's out for a really long time. Wilmer Flores, I don't know what I think about the Giants and their platoons. Tyler Nevin in Oakland, like none of these are great team contexts. Noelvi Marte, who's not going to play for a couple of months. Joey Meneses, and then DJ LeMahieu, who I actually find interesting for this conversation because he's the last guy I saw when the ball changed, I was like, oh, those don't look like they're going to be home runs anymore. And that's exactly what Todd identified with Drury. So I think that what you, maybe you don't get the power back that you got with Drury in terms of 20 home runs, but still can hit you 268. He's still an above average run producer in terms of RBIs and those types of things. And I think if he turns it around and just goes back to being who he was the last couple of seasons, even if you only get 12 home runs instead of 22, that's better than most of the guys I just named.
Yeah, Todd, what do you think about, I mean, those names don't make me extremely excited as, you know, a manager on a 15-team league, especially with the guys who I really do like are on the IL or are suspended. Do you, just out of the names that Sarah listed, would you still hold on to Drury if you needed like a corner infield spot?
No, probably not of those names. I don't, no. I would, at this point, we've had a little time to replace them. And again, with the eligibility, depending upon one's roster, you can move, shift people around and potentially get them replaced. No, there wasn't a whole lot there that excites me. And first of all, yeah, any league that you're in, Sarah, they're taking it real seriously. And it's just as competitive as an FBC main event. Let's not go there. These leagues are people ready for this. People quit on NFBC leagues. I didn't just explode. Anyway, so it's a good. I mean, based on those names, man, I have a tough argument there. 15 team league, 12. I'll bet you a little bit better. But maybe what I'll do is I'll take a Ben Sheets as a placeholder and hope that somebody else comes along when it's later on at some point when I need him.
There were a couple of names lower who are like Kobe Mayo. If the Orioles actually called him up and played him, that would be kind of interesting. But I don't know, man. I don't know how much I trust the Orioles these days. They're kind of like the Rays with playing time. Rookies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different argument. The Orioles are doing what their players tell them to do, though.
That's true. I think
that if you're playing well, you'll play. But anyway.
Fair. All right. So we'll head to rebuttals. Sarah, we'll go to you first.
I agree with Todd about the team context for the Angels, and I agree with him that Drury is not going to be, he's not going to save you, right? Like, he's not coming back like Tristan Casas to rescue your team and potentially like just catch on fire in the second half. But if he reverts to his mean that we have seen from the last three seasons, I think he's better than what you can find on the waiver wire. And one of the things that I find really interesting about industry leagues and how much movement, like there's some people who really churn players like the second they're hurt, they're like, get them off my roster. I can't play this guy. I've got to get somebody who's going to play. I don't find myself thinking, play that, like replace them with who? Like, as long as you're not taking a zero in that spot, if you have someone who is going to play, who is better, leave the guy on your bench until you can replace him with someone that you're more excited to have on your bench. The time when you have to drop someone is when you're about to take a zero. And, you know, I just experienced that in a league that I'm in where I've been using Luis Renjifo and his like multi-position eligibility all over the place. And all of a sudden he's on the 10-day IL and I found myself finally needing to drop Garrett Mitchell. And I had somebody in that league say, you're just dropping Garrett Mitchell. I was like, yes, I am. Because I think Garrett Mitchell could do some good things next year. And I didn't like anybody who was on the waiver wire better than Garrett Mitchell until this point in time where I absolutely needed to play someone. So always consider your drops in the context of who you're trying to replace and whether it's a bench spot or whether you're trying to replace a guy who's actually going to play.
All right, Dad, what you got for you?
I think the thing with me and Drury is, he was hurt in mid-April with the same hamstring. My concern is he going to be healthy when he comes back? And I would rather get a head start on replacing him now than I would of, all right, waiting for him. He comes back, regardless how he does, he gets hurt again, and now I'm back to the drawing board. I want the head start now. And maybe I don't use the guys that Sarah listed. Maybe I use Sheets, or maybe, you know, I use whoever I have in my reserve and pick up LeMahieu, hoping to plug him in. I don't have one shot. I mean, this week, the next week, the week after, there will be opportunities to pick up players while you guys are all figuring out your closers and your starters. Maybe I sneak in and get a middle infield or a corner infield. Sometimes that's how it works out, that, you know, under the radar, you're all the next prospect under the radar. And I'm looking to feel it. I feel like Billy Bean in the aggregate, as opposed to just one player.
it's a great point. And I do believe that, like, there are times where you stumble on guys in that drop process that are super helpful. So I will concede that Todd probably will stumble on more of those people than I will. I usually just like my guys too much. We are going to take a quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, we have some more debates, including some discussion of Tristan Cassis and a couple of Japanese pitchers who I'm super interested in. So come right back. We're back. I have this debate to moderate, and, you know, injured players, y'all, still a really difficult roster decision. Let's talk about one of those guys who is available in my TGFBI who nobody is stashing at the moment. Tristan Cassis, who was having a breakout season prior to the injury that he described as a car crash within his body generated by the torque he generates on swings, which every time the imagery of that just, like, sticks with me. It sounds so incredibly painful to damage your rib cage and your diaphragm in that way. As we just demonstrated, there are not a lot of options there at corner infield. Are you holding Cassis or not? And Shelley, we'll start with you.
I had Cassis and, a lot of leagues, and honestly, I don't have him anymore outside of this one dynasty league that I do have Cassis in, and I am holding him and hugging him because I love Cassis as a Red Sox fan. But from a redraft standpoint, I just couldn't really justify holding him because of the car crash inside of him. We don't even have a timetable of when he's coming back. And just the idea, just trying to visualize that injury and him going from immediately from the 10-day to the 60-day without any, oh, he's starting to rehab, so we're going to put him on the 60-day because he's really close to that or something like that. Yeah, we haven't really heard much about Cassis since his injury, and they immediately put him from the 10 to the 60. That scares me a lot. And yeah, it really, really hurt to drop him because I thought that he was going to have, like, a breakout season, whatever that means. You know, I thought he was going to hit 30, 35 home runs and put up, like, a, you know, 260, 270 average. That's kind of what I was expecting from him. And yeah, it really stunk going to the waiver wire and looking at all the CI options. It wasn't great, but I dropped him because I'm like, I don't think that I can hold him in reserves, per se, without IL spots, of course. I don't think that I could hold him long enough. So let me just, like what Todd was saying earlier, let me just have some other claws here and there, and maybe I will grab someone that helps me out before, instead of like holding him for like 3 weeks and then trying that, you know, just trying to grab at anything that I have. So yeah, I've dropped him everywhere. I didn't like it. I hope he comes back and kills it. But yeah, I've dropped him everywhere.
That's rough. And it's really hard when it's one of the guys you super love. Like, I think my hardest drop this year was Adbert Alzolay, which I'm sure a bunch of people are like, oh, come on. That's just like, I didn't think he was going to be the closer. Well, I did think he was going to be the closer, and I watched him close last year, and I was at his first game at Wrigley. And when it's one of your guys that you just really love and they're on your team, it's a super painful drop. So Shelley, I am feeling that one for sure. Todd, what about you? What are you doing with Cassis and why?
All right. So I mostly agree with what Shelley said. However, the whole, we don't know what's going on. It's weird, but it's a 60-day DL, so I'm not sure that we're going to hear a whole lot. The upside of Tristan Cassis, you guys both referred to the 30, 35 homers, et cetera. To me, the upside is worth hanging on to until we know more. At that point, I'll either agree with Shelley and he's gone, or I'll hang on for what I need. It's a little bit, you know, I dropped a couple of guys in these discussions already. AJ Puck with saves and Brennan Jury. The upside of Tristan Cassis can change the standings. So I'm going to hold on until we know more information. He's, as you guys know, he's kind of a weird guy anyway, right? Kind of a little bit flippy. So I'm not too surprised that we haven't heard too much. I think some of that might even be the team telling them, stay low. Don't be goofy to the media during this time you're away. You know, we're trying to get some stuff accomplished here. I don't know. So I think it's in where we – on RotoWire, we've got to the 21st. That's probably the day he was on, plus 60. So we have another month and a week before we hear something. I will hold on for that month, hopefully, to get some positive information and then just have a second half. Because his power can cut through the ball not flying. He's got that wall there. The ball travels 3 feet less. I don't care. Still going to hit the wall anyway.
It's a really great point about the park and the type of power that Casas has. I mean, one of the things that I'll say, Todd, and I'm curious if this influenced your decision, home runs have been very hard to come by on the waiver wire this season because of what you were talking about with the ball. We had Jason Collette on the show a few weeks ago, and he was talking about this as well. I find that I am less ready to drop legitimate power than I have been in other seasons, right? Like back in 2019, I was like, oh, I can find 25 home runs on the waiver wire. You cannot do that anymore. And is that part of what's influencing your decision with Casas?
Yes, along with the fact that I think he's better able to overcome the ball sprouting wings and that sort of, or parachute. I think he might be better to overcome that. We saw what he can do the second half of last year once he kind of got his approach down and all set. Line up the context, it should be really, really good. Yay, Dominic Smith, yay, Garrett Cooper. There's a job there for him. And he was, I don't know if you guys noticed, and maybe it's just the Boston fan in me, he looked a lot more comfortable around the bat, too. I think he's improving defensively, so which is always a positive. If only for the mindset, just the general feel, and on a team that needs defense, et cetera, I think that that was a positive.
I totally agree with you that he's looked better defensively. I honestly like considered going to Boston to get the Tristan Casas yoga bobblehead because I am that girl and I really need that yoga bobblehead. If anyone is going to get one and you want to send it to me, hit me up on Twitter. I'm into this trait. I will figure out a way to make it worth your while. Shelley, with Casas, so hard to drop. I heard everything you were saying there. I'm gonna give you a hypothetical. Say you're in a league, not like Tout where there's unlimited IL, because obviously you're holding on to Casas in an unlimited IL situation. But what about a standard, like you're in a 12-team league, you've got two IL spots, you're probably already using them for a couple of guys. Is Casas the type of guy you want to hold in that limited IL spot, or is he still a drop for you?
I mean, it really depends. I mean, I also, in a lot of the leagues that had Casas, I had Francisco Alvarez, which again, same type of power thing, less average, of course, but same type of power. And I've dropped them, both of them, in both of them. So, and then like the next week, you know, other managers like snagged them up in Fab. So maybe I did the wrong thing, but I don't know. I just felt maybe with my specific team context, I needed the production. I could not wait on whenever Casas would appear or Alvarez or whomever, that I just needed that spot. I needed some type of production. Yeah, it might come back to bite me in the butt, you know, come August or September, July, whatever. But yeah, I just needed to churn because my team was just lacking everywhere and I needed some at bats. I needed some type of production. So leagues where I had them, I needed to drop them, but I totally understand if you had that wiggle room. I'd use that word again. I should find another word for that. If I had like that little area to play in, then yeah, I would keep Casas. But in my specific teams, I just didn't have that area to play in. So I had to drop him. And it's probably going to come back to bite me.
It's a tongue twister. And it's by design. And we're just going to ban this.
Buffer. Use buffer. How about go with buffer?
Buffer.
Yes.
That's from my science days. It's buffer. Eligibility. Yeah, that's the other one. You couldn't say it. I can't write it. I have never written eligibility correctly ever. I don't even bother anymore. I let spell check take care of it. Kind of like Albuquerque.
Spell check has been a godsend. I was misspelling opportunity like at every opportunity.
I mean, you do some minus work, Shelley. I can't spell Albuquerque. I just go an A, an L, then a couple of Q's, a couple of R's, and I let spell check take care of the rest.
Figure it out. Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Anyway.
Pro tips here on Fantasy Feud. Y'all, that's one siren for Todd. Siren. If you listen to RotoWire, you know what we're talking about. Shelly, your 1 minute rebuttal.
Yeah, I love Casas. I think that he is great. I think he's going to be great next year. I think he's going to be great when he comes back. But if you don't have the buffer to have him on your team, I think it is okay to drop just because it still is a gray area of when he's coming back.
Fair enough. Todd.
Oh, a rebuttal?
Yeah, you get 1 minute.
The upside is just, I want the upside. It's a difference changing, making upside. I don't think that's really the right order of words. He can make a big difference. And I want to hold on as long as I can. I've held this long. I think I can make it work another three or four or five weeks till we know more information. You know what? We may sign off and there may be a note and we may already know. We may not know until mid to end of June either. So want to know what's going on before I make such a decision on such a potentially helpful player.
Good stuff. Thank you all for that great debate. I think Shelly is moderating our next debate.
I thought you were going to say Shelly won that debate. I was like, what?
The only time we've had winners declared on this show, because we don't do winners or losers. The debate is the victory, people. Like the debate gets us to a bigger end. Nick Pollock was declaring winners with his. He also brought a gavel, which I still have questions about why Nick Pollock has a gavel, but that's all for another day.
Well, he's the boss, right? He can have whatever he wants.
Fair. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, so this next debate, I'm pretty excited about. It's two guys that I was really excited during draft season. I drafted one a lot, didn't draft the other at all. And, of course, the other one at all has performed better. Except randomly last night, he was having trouble locating his pitches. But, Sarah, I have to tell you something. This is... My husband, Rudy, really wanted to see Shota for the first time. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this on for you. Because he's like, oh, yeah, I heard he was great. I'm like, you know, he's not. I know that he's not going to perform well because you've never seen him and whatever. And then he just had like that awful night. And I'm like, now I'm going to have to tell Sarah that his bad performance was all Rudy's fault. So just putting it out there. But anyway, so we have two Japanese pitchers here. We have Shota Imanaga and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I'm going to go with Todd with this one. Which one would you rather roster?
I'm going to use the expression, and it isn't even close, when I say Yamamoto. Noticed earlier in the week and wrote about it a little bit on ESPN, the rookie of the year odds have flipped. I mean, Yamamoto was the overwhelming favorite heading into the season. Imanaga is now the betting favorite. Now, I know lines are set up to the most action and some of that's involved, but the shift is just huge. Imanaga is the betting favorite right now and higher favorite for Cy Young, and it just blows my mind. I won't quote all the numbers, but their underlying metrics are nearly the same. Their strikeout rate, walk rate, K minus BB, XFIP and Sierra for Yamamoto and Imanaga are nearly identical. Now, the surface stats of Imanaga are much better, Griven, and I'm willing to say that Imanaga is better than my number scouting said he would be, if you will. I thought it was really, Sarah, you probably read about this, or maybe even saw it on the kind of apparatus they set up for him in the spring to throw the ball high, kind of like a pitch back with a hole in it, was A, brilliant, and B, very, very useful. That the high rider that he's been throwing, Imanaga. But I think that we're going to be seeing the regression. Yamamoto's doing what he needs to be doing. Imanaga, what worries me is he's getting strikeouts, swing strike 15%, but his called strikes are on 11%. That scares me. I think the strikeout rates will come down. What he's done is support it. I don't think he's going to continue doing what he's doing. The same with the walk rate. And the home run rate, I think that was a concern with Imanaga, right? Everything else was pretty close. He gave up, you know, a huge amount of home runs. And when you translate to the MLB, it was even more. It's over two per game. That was a concern. Now, part of the thing I was just talking about with the high rider was to help that, and it may have. But we all know that Wrigley Field shrinks once the weather gets warmer, once the ivy turns green, once the wind starts blowing out. So I think we've seen the best numbers from Imanaga. He's going to – it's going to be a softer fall than I thought, but I think he's going to fall. And have not seen anything from Yamamoto that's scaring me off of what, you know, all the Cy Youngs and all the MVPs that he won. I think what we thought coming in is still the same Yamamoto. I'm concerned that Imanaga is going to be able to keep up the bit. And he himself said, I'm having a good season, but let's wait till I go through the lineups or the rosters two or three times before, or the opponent two or three times before you know, tell me how good I am.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. And I just want to caveat my statement that I'm about to make with this is redraft only, right? Like if you're in a dynasty league and you want Yamamoto over Imanaga, the age difference matters a lot. And this is redraft only, in my opinion. I actually think what Shota's doing is incredible, totally replicable. And I have not felt this way since what we used to call Jake Day here in Chicago, when Jake Arrieta was pitching like he was Bob Gibson, right? Like this is a really impressive thing to see. And Shelley, it's funny that you bring up the start against the Braves and that he would struggle, because I actually don't think he struggled. I think he got braced. I think he got Atlanta a little bit. If you look, two things happened in that start, and I encourage everyone to go look at the pitch map, the graphic that you can get from Baseball Savant that shows the location of where balls and strikes are called. There were about 8 balls that clipped the top edge of the zone or the outside of the zone that were all called balls instead of strikes. Those have been called strikes in Shota's other starts. He gets those as called strikes. This is a fundamentally different line. He doesn't have 3 walks against the Braves, and the Braves start swinging at more of those pitches, which is part of Imanaga's game, right? Like he gets you to chase at that high ball that's just on the line because it got called a strike, and all of a sudden he can re-raise on you. The home plate ump wasn't calling those what I will call strikes, because they caught part of the box. You can see it very clearly. It was a tighter zone, and that allowed the Braves to not swing, which they were not swinging against Imanaga. That's the trick, right? Because when you start swinging against him, now you have to deal with the tunnel of that high fastball with that splitter, and you can't see it, and you just whiff, and that's when he looks his best. His worst start in Major League Baseball against the Atlanta freaking Braves, who are one of the best lineups in sports, was 5 innings, 7 hits, 0 runs, no earned runs, no home runs, 3 walks, 8 strikeouts. That's the man's worst start against one of the 2 best lineups in the sport. It's incredible. I've never seen anything like it. All he does is just go out there, strike guys out, paint the zone, and make you look silly. And the Braves got very lucky that they had a home plate umpire who didn't call like 8 balls that could have been called strikes. So I think what Shota's doing is totally replicable. The knock on him is the fly ball rate. The concern was that those would be home runs at Wrigley Field. And I'm just going to tell y'all, I was there when Shota faced the Dodgers and the wind was blowing out to left. And I was terrified because I'm like, oh my God, all of those right-handed Dodger mashers are going to hit balls to Waveland all day. And you know what? They did not, because Shota is brilliant. And he threw pitches that were designed to get them to make soft contact and hit them opposite field. And all of those balls were outs to right field, with the exception of one ball that I think he threw to Shohei Ohtani that I don't even remember. What I'm going to say here, I think this is replicable. I think it's replicable second time through the league. I think it might be replicable third time through the league. And we should all just enjoy it, because I haven't seen anything like this since peak Jake Arrieta. And man, is it fun to watch.
Yeah. I kind of feel like Todd, where he was like, yeah, he kind of beat my projections about what he was going to be when he came over. And it just boggles my mind that the deal that he did sign with the Cubs, like 4 years, $53 million. Again, this has only been, how many starts? 8 starts so far? But that deal seems extremely just really, really good. Exactly, Sarah.
I'm pushing my hands together. I'm like, good job, Jed. There are some escalators. He should make more money than this if he continues to pitch this way.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do. I have been impressed with what Shota has done. And honestly, I've been really impressed with his honesty a little bit more with the media. That's pretty cool. With that first start, he was like, oh yeah, the wind was blowing in and I was just trying to get fly balls. He's honest with what he's trying to do with the media. And then he looks at different things. So I think, again, like what Todd said, that he might beat the quote unquote projections. But Sarah, he has not faced the same team twice. I don't know when he's going to, but are you a tad bit concerned that a team could figure out that, oh, he's going to throw these high fastballs, try not swinging them, and maybe we'll get lucky with the home plate umpire or whatever?
Let me just double check one thing super quick before I make a statement that is incorrect, but I am pretty sure. No, I don't know how the schedule has managed this, but actually, yeah, no, he has not faced the same team twice yet. And I thought he might need to get to face the Braves twice, but he's not going to. He's going to face the Pirates for the first time, miss the Braves at Wrigley, and then his next start is against St. Louis, according to the excellent RotoWire probable pitchers grid, which is my go-to for all things looking forward into the future for probable pitchers. So I don't know, man. He's going to get through like all of May without having to face the same team twice. And frankly, it's the type of delivery that I don't think it helps you if you see it once in April and once again in June, because the thing that Shota's doing that is trickier than anything else he does, yes, the tunneling is great, the splitter is great, the high fastball is great, whatever. The thing that he does that is trickier than anything, he comes over the top and he's short. He's only like 5'9". So it's almost like, you remember how Tim Lincecum used to have that delivery that kind of came out from this weird angle and the ball had all this funky movement on it because it was coming from a slot that you never saw before? That's Shota Imanaga with plus stuff, a fastball with rise and a splitter that the bottom drops out of. And the thing that I saw yesterday when he was quote unquote struggling to 5 shutout innings against one of the best lineups in baseball is that when that wasn't working, when that high fastball splitter thing wasn't working, he introduced the sweeper that he barely ever throws. And that worked. He was getting whiffs on the sweeper. And I'm just like, we've not even seen this man's bag of tricks yet. There's a reason he's called the throwing philosopher. We should all just enjoy it. I fundamentally believe that over the next 5 years, Yamamoto might be the better pitcher. But in this season, the year of our Lord, 2024, I think it's Shota and I don't think it's close.
All right. Those are fighting words, Todd. So do you have any rebuttals to Saru?
Imagine a Cubs fan complaining about umpiring. And who would, coming from Boston fan. All right. A couple things with which I disagree. I don't want to say a correction. The Braves on paper have the best lineup, but in April they had the sixth best, most productive. And in May, they're the seventh worst productive lineup. So they are struggling a bit. Has nothing to do with the argument. I'm still not using pitching against Atlanta because they're going to break up like that. It's the repeatability part that I don't agree with. Both Imanaga and Yamamoto are sporting low BABIPs. They're probably going to go up some. We're not 100% sure. I disagree with the whole short, the motion. More times see that, the better. I think that you will get used to it because it is different. So I think teams have a better chance of getting used to that sort of thing the more times that they see him. But I'm going to go back to the called strikes versus the swinging strikes. That strikeout rate is just bound to fall. 15% strikeout rate. Can he keep it? I don't know if anybody can maintain. Very few can maintain that high, and you can't get by an 11% called strike rate. How much of that has to do with the high strike not being called when it's in the zone, and maybe it should have been? Not sure, but I think the idea is to get people to chase and hit the pop-ups anyway, as opposed to getting called strikes. I think there is a lot of factors in Imanaga's game that are going to be hard to carry through. 92% left on base percent, 92% left on base rate. That's not necessarily him. That's just dumb luck. He doesn't even have to pitch worse for that to come down. So I think there's too much gravity working against Imanaga repeating what he's doing or sustaining what he's doing.
I agree that he's probably not going to have a 0.96 ERA on the season. I don't think he's going to wind up with an ERA that is worse than Yamamoto. So one of the things that does stand out to me comparing these two pitchers, Shota's FIP right now is 2.30. Yamamoto's FIP is, or I'm sorry, 2.30 for Shota. Yamamoto's FIP is 3.24. That's a difference of a run in terms of their fielding independent pitching. And I think that that matters, right? Like, I think that Shota's age has given him some confidence in how he's dealing with the league. And he is, I'm telling y'all, and Shelly, you kind of commented on it with his transparency, the way he talks to the media. He is toying with people. He is toying with people in his approach. He is toying with fans a little bit in ways that are fun and great, like coming out to with the lyrics to Go Cubs Go. He does not speak English. His press conference, he like memorized the words to Go Cubs Go. His walkout song when he pitches in Chicago is Chelsea Dagger. That is the Blackhawks song, and he did it deliberately. He was like, I went to a Blackhawks game. I decided to take their music, and that's what he comes out to. He is playing around with all of these things. He told Chicago Cubs fans that the reason he wanted number 18 was because Ben Zobrist wore it, and he asked Ben Zobrist if he could wear it, and Zobrist was all like, that is the kindest thing because I was the World Series MVP, da-da-da-da. All of the Japanese pitchers wear number 18. So it might have been loosely related to Zobrist, but like half, like there's like seven or eight guys who have all worn number 18. Shota is playing a different game on a different level. Is there some day in the future at Wrigley Field where the wind is blowing out, where it doesn't quite work the way he wants it to? Maybe. But at this moment in time, the only time I've seen him pitch with the wind blowing out, he hamstrung the Dodgers and didn't give up a run. So I'm just not really going to be all that worried about it until I see him actually fail with my own eyes.
Yeah. I don't know where we are with the rebuttals and stuff, but that was a really, really fun debate.
Real quick, FIP versus XFIP. FIP does not normalize home runs, which is why it's favoring Imanaga now. I think you need to normalize the home runs, in which case it's close, but that flips to Yamamoto's favor. But we can debate Sierra, which are the same, by the way. They're the same Sierra. So that's why I kind of called expected ERA as a wash.
That's fair.
I don't say I don't believe in FIP, but I don't look at FIP as much. But anyway.
No, you're totally right about FIP and XFIP, and I will concede that point. You're right that they're virtually identical on the latter. Shota's fun, y'all. Todd, I think you do have a rebuttal left, unless I'm totally misremembering.
Oh. Oh, well, that was it. It's X, you know, I'm not going to base an argument. I'm not going to concede the argument debate based on the better FIP. I think there are better things to look at. I am concerned about home runs. I am concerned about the walk rate staying where it is, especially if you're not getting the called strikes. I am encouraged, as you said, and I saw it myself, when, all right, I'm not getting the high strikes, I got to do something else. He was a little stubborn early, but then he's all right. You win. We're going low and away, and I think that's a good thing that he was able to make that adjustment. Let's when the ivy turns green, we can revisit this discussion.
Done. Consider it done. Todd, it looks like after a quick break from our sponsors, you've got the moderation duties for the next debate. Stick around, y'all. You will not want to miss it. We are back. I am turning the moderation duties over to Todd.
Oh, that's a mistake, giving me the microphone. I like in crowds, I get all jelly and goofy and shy. Put a microphone in front of me and you can't shut me up. Anyway, which you guys have seen at first pitch. So we're doing the trade discussion. We're going to keep it's going to be kind of general, kind of open as far as trade etiquette, trade policies, trade approach. This is based on a tout table that we did. We just asked everybody some of the mistakes made, and this discussion is just generating out of that. So what did we decide? We were just going to decide. We're going to leave it pretty open and let you guys take it where you want. To trade or not to trade, do you like the trade? Are you an active trader? Are you more of a passive trader? I'll respond to offers, but I'm probably not going to spend too much time panning through rosters to find someone to trade with. Is that a fair way to frame it? Okay. I think since I know what this about, the spoiler, I know what they're going to say. I think Sarah starting may make for a better discussion. So why don't we go there?
Yeah, for sure. I'm a moderate trader. I am not the person who's out there offering trades to everybody every week, but I do like looking at the standings, seeing where I can gain and where other people can gain. And I will make offers and I will make aggressive offers. I will make offers that are fun. I am one of the people who completed a trade in the tout table a couple of years ago. It was myself and Andy Behrens. I traded him my Clayton Kershaw because I had some surplus pitching and he had Seiya Suzuki, who I was really interested in for power and speed. This, like, full disclosure, Clayton Kershaw got hurt like 2 days later. Seiya Suzuki got hurt 3 days after that. So it was the least impactful trade in the history of tout wars. But we did it in the tout table and it was sort of fun. I think that trades are best when you come at them with a lens of empathy. And what I mean by that is look at what you need and then go out and find somebody whose needs match your needs and give them something they need, right? So if I have a surplus of pitching, I want to go sort the standings to see who could use some ERA, who's like going to gain some points if they get a few more strikeouts or a few more innings pitched in that particular tout league. It's the alternate categories one that is super fun and amazing. Or like if somebody really needs saves and holds and I'm sitting on some surplus saves and holds, like I want to offer them saves and holds and I want to ask for something that I need back. And last year, a trade that did not take place, Casey Bubba and I were talking through the parameters of a trade that would have sent my Spencer Strider to him for his Corbin Carroll because he was crushing the whole league in stolen bases. And I could gain about 5 standings points if I got even a fraction of the stolen bases that Corbin Carroll was putting up. And I had a surplus of strikeouts. I had Strider and of Eovaldi, and we were sitting there in like June or whenever it was that Corbin Carroll's shoulder went out. And we had that trade done. And then Corbin Carroll threw his shoulder out during a swing. And I was like, I need a week. I need a week before I'm going to complete this trade. And it never came together because I didn't believe in Corbin Carroll's shoulder. But, you know, so I'm willing to make a big deal. I just think you do it with someone who is going to also benefit from the deal. Don't be the person that offers to trade somebody a big name prospect that replicates something they already have. Look at mutual needs and make your offers that way.
Okay, makes a lot of sense. So, Shelly, are you active trader? Do you make the first offer a lot? How do you go about making your trades?
I am notoriously like the worst trader. Like when I was on some other podcasts, these were dynasty focused. I'm just like I never trade, and it probably hurts me. But that time I was like really, 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 really into prospects. So I was able to like churn my minor league pool of players. So I didn't quote unquote necessarily have to trade because I always had a guy that, you know, might be coming up or whatever. But in redraft leagues, again, I've always played this way. I'm really not a trader. I think it's a lot of work and I appreciate what Sarah does because I have gotten, as everyone else has gotten offers of my best player, just for hyperbole, my best player for 3 meh players. And I'm like, you're not even trying. And again, I don't try, but then I don't put those offers out there. So just if you want to do trades, do some type of footwork. And look at the other rosters. But again, I don't have that time. I don't do that. So I don't feel comfortable with trading. I don't put trade offers out there. If I get a decent trade offer, but it's not exactly what I want, yeah, I might engage with the other manager to be like, oh, what if I give you this player for that player? I might do a little bit more research there, but I'm just not like the active trader who goes out and looks for specific categories. I go to the waiver wire for that. Maybe that's a down spot of my gameplay. But yeah, Kudos to anyone who does that. I know Ian Khan. I have gotten many phone calls from Ian trying to work out trades. I'm just not that person, but kudos to anyone who does that.
I know this isn't part of the question. My problem with trading is I can't say no. So in order to do a good trade, you need to get as many offers as you can, which means, you know, N minus one, you're saying, you know, no. You have to tell the person that you're not taking it. That's hard for me. But anyway, so Sarah, you know your league and you know Shelly's in it, and not just because of this, but you just know that this is the way that she approaches things, but you know there's a heck of a match on her roster. And so how do you go about communicating with her to turn her on to the fact that you guys have a really good match and it's worth taking some time to take a look at a trade?
Again, I'm just going to go back to what I said originally. It's empathy, right? So like if I'm looking at Shelly's roster and I see that Shelly has Tristan Casas on her roster, because of course she does, because she loves Tristan Casas, I know that Shelly needs a corner infielder or a first baseman. And if I'm sitting and like I am right now in tout, like I have Spencer Steer, Nathaniel Lowe, and Kyle Manzardo, I think there's probably a way that I can generate some interest there. And, you know, I've got one, I can only play so many of those guys unless I throw one of them into my utility spot, right? And I've got a pretty good guy in my utility spot right now. So it's a situation where I've got a surplus and that does nothing for me. Kyle Manzardo on my bench is just, it's just insurance at this moment in time. I know Kyle Manzardo is better than anyone who's on the waiver wire for a corner infield or first base spot. I might reach out and say, hey, curious, see that you're doing really well in pitching. I could use some more innings and strikeouts. What would you offer for Kyle Manzardo? And I'd let Shelly fill in the blank there, right? And that makes it an active choice on her part to engage. Maybe she doesn't have anything that she's willing to give up there. Maybe those pitching points are really important and that's the only thing keeping her afloat and she just doesn't feel like she can part with any of those people. And that's fine. I'll move on to the next person who I think can use a first baseman. God knows whoever drafted Jose Abreu can use a first baseman. God knows whoever's got Cabrian Hayes could also use a corner spot, right? But that's one of those situations. You look at where you have surplus and you look at where there are needs and you try to meet the person head on. I'll be very, very blunt. I never want anyone to walk away from a trade with me and feel like they got jobbed. I want people to feel like it was a totally honest deal. We all feel good about it. One of the worst feelings I ever had in my life was after Andy and I made that trade and Clayton Kershaw went on the IL immediately, because I was just like, should I offer to rescind it? Like, that just feels terrible. Luckily for me, my conscience was quickly assuaged because Seiya Suzuki can't stay healthy either.
Andy would have said no, we made the deal, but that's, you know,
he did say no, actually.
we know. And Andy's
great.
All right, Shelly. So you don't, it's fine. You don't like to, you know, I've got some time. I'm going to find a trade match, but there are times where you're kind of forced to have to make a trade to be the initiator. Do you put out a cattle call? Do you find a team and just, I only want to deal with this. I don't want to talk with everybody. I just want to talk with this team. Or do you wait for Ian to call? What do you do when you have to make a trade?
When I do have to make a trade, I do what everyone else does. I try to find the best match. And I try to do, and again, I'm not good at it because I've never done it. I'm not, quote unquote, like trained to do it, if that makes sense. But yeah, I will try to find like the best match. And yeah, I have found times that I offer a trade and, you know, the other manager's like, what are you talking about? No, thank you. So then I have to go like, oh, okay, I see what you're talking about. And then go try to find another manager. So I have done it. I just don't like to do it. It's just not my jam.
Fair enough. I don't know if this is so much a rebuttal, but any final things you want to add, Sarah?
This isn't a rebuttal so much as an offer. Shelly has coached me through dropping some of my guys because, as we have already uncovered on this podcast, I'm going to sit on my guy until there's a better replacement available and or the roster situation like forces me to make a move. Shelly, I will coach you through trades if you coach me through drops.
totally.
Counter offer?
Oh, yeah, yeah. What's your counter offer?
Fab sweetener, draft picks, no. You know, that this, we're done. I mean, no money exchange. I mean, this, you know, the done deal. Huh? Wow. This is
it's how ladies trade.
I can. All right. Okay. Okay.
Chris, like, I'll help you. You help me.
Wow. I should. Anyway, I need. We. I mean, I say this literally in a joke. We need more ladies in the leagues. We do, but we'll talk about that in the off season. Okay. Exactly. I think we're. Oh, Shelly, did you have anything to add?
No. But I'm happy to learn from you, Sarah.
I get
the one place where it's the one place where I can teach Shelly anything.
Can I just offer you Fred Zinke?
Yes.
We talked about Ian. Let's get Fred involved. Fred needs to get involved here. And Fred is one of the most effective traders. He just knows how to approach everybody, and you almost feel guilty when you don't make the trade with Fred. Which, but anyway, we'll leave it at that. I think we have one more of your of the debate, so we'll hand the microphone back to Sarah.
Yeah, I think the microphone's actually going to Shelly, but Shelly. We should definitely have Fred on the show to debate some trades. I might have to find some trades that have gone down in town and get Fred's takes on them. Shelly, you're going to take us home on this last debate.
Yeah, so I was looking at the Fangraphs player reader, what I usually do, because I'm just, I think it's pretty good and it's relatively easy to find because I'm typically have a tab open for Fangraphs. But it's kind of like a question that I thought, like performing outfielders on underperforming teams. So both Joe Adell and Brian De La Cruz have been absolutely fantastic this year. According to the Fangraphs player reader, Adell has earned $14.20, while De La Cruz has bettered him just by a little bit, earning $15.50. While we shouldn't necessarily expect many to have a lot of RBI just based on their team, if you had to, you know, stake your claim, you know, from today on, who would you rather have? Would you rather have the other De La Cruz, or are you singing Rolling in the Deep with Adele? Todd, I'll go with you. What do you got?
Good. I don't have to look up De La Cruz's stats. I can just talk about it in the rebuttal. This folds into more of the philosophy that I was talking about earlier, in that I don't actually have to mention this philosophy, but I like to play it safe early. Then I like to take my chances later on. I know I'm not the only one that says that. A lot of people say that. Almost everybody says that. Not everybody does it, but it's kind of common, manager speak as far as fantasy goes. So for me, and De La Cruz is a little bit higher up in the food chain than for this to be the best example, but it's more about Adele's upside. It's more about what Adele could be if this is finally it. If it finally comes to fruition, if everything, the skills come together and we see what we expected from Joe Adell a couple years back. The underlying metrics back it, and I think they do with De La Cruz as well. A whole lot of red on a Joe Adell StatCats page. So we're not talking about a player who's been lucky, if you will. And, you know, the argument being, well, you're wrong because there's some corrections, some regression coming. Whether Adell can keep up this level, there's a debate, there's an argument, but he's at the level now. And the team context actually kind of favors him a bit, in that there's going to be opportunity, especially with Trout out. But this is the team, the Angels. This is kind of the last gasp of, is Adell part of a future or not? And so he's going to get the chance. Doesn't mean that he's going to continue the level, but the opportunity should be there, even if Trout comes back. There's three outfield spots. Taylor Ward has one. They can find a spot to use both Adell and Trout in the same outfield. You guys alluded to the running that Ron Washington wants the team to run. You take a look at their lineups, like, okay, great. Who? Adell's one. So I understand runs and RBI may be down, but if he continues to get on base, he should continue to run. And I think that's the bonus as well. So it's not an anti-De La Cruz argument. It's more of a, this is the where I want to take my chance. This is where I want to go for it. And if I miss out on De La Cruz's middle of the road, all right, fine. I can still replace Adell with It used to be David Peralta was my go-to. He's probably not there anyway. Maybe Jock Peterson or someone like that. There's always a lefty platoon hitter that plays five times a week that's not going to hurt you. And that's a downgrade from De La Cruz, but I'm willing to risk that for the upside of Joe Odell.
Yeah, with Joe Odell, like he's just been, like, you know, like I've said, like he's just been outstanding. And then we had like some bat speed metrics come out this week, and he was in the top 10 of bat speed. While we're still, as you know, just a community trying to figure out what bat speed actually means, top 8 is not bad. I mean, he's right behind Joe Adele and right in front of Julio. Again, we still don't know exactly what that means, but it's not bad. So, Sarah, what do you think about De La Cruz?
I don't know how good of a debate this is going to be because I agree with pretty much everything Todd just said. I think that the reason you prefer De La Cruz is he's a higher floor guy, even though he doesn't have quite the ceiling that Joe Adele does. But I do want to say, and it's hard for me to argue against Joe Adele here because one of the guys that he is right by on all of those bat speed metrics, like literally all of them, even the like charts that are like X, Y axis and everything, is Christopher Morel, who anyone who follows me on Twitter knows I am the world's biggest Christopher Morel stan. And I love everything about Christopher Morel. Here's the difference between Christopher Morel and Joe Adele for me. Christopher Morel has never had the struggles that Joe Adele has had. We have seen the Joe Adele movie before where he like comes, he's really hot for a minute, and then he's craters, right? Comes really hot for a minute, craters. Some of that was playing time. Some of that was opportunity. Some of that might have been manager. What he's doing this season looks real. It looks sustainable. And it looks like it's an incredibly high upside. And would any of us be surprised if we're having this conversation in July and Joe Adele is striking out too much, lost whatever it was that he had, and got sent back to AAA and or traded? I don't think we would be surprised by that. Brian De La Cruz, on the other hand, is a solid floor player. So when I look for guys on last place teams who can put together some numbers, I want guys who I'm pretty sure of their production. I don't want guys who are volatile and all over the place. And Adele is volatile and all over the place. I don't know what Joe Adele looks like when he doesn't have some of these other guys in the lineup, like a Mike Trout, or if Taylor Ward were to get hurt, like what that looks like. I mean, we've already talked about Brandon Drury's struggles. Like he's got some problems, right? So I'm not sure about the supporting cast around either of these guys, but I'm very sure that Brian De La Cruz is one of the three best hitters on the Marlins and is going to be that guy day in and day out. What I mean by that is if I need to guarantee, quote unquote, as much as you can guarantee anything in fantasy baseball, that I'm going to get 20 home runs from one of these guys, I feel better about getting those 20 home runs from Brian De La Cruz than I do from Joe Adele. But Todd is 100% correct. This is all about how you feel about high floor or high ceiling versus low ceiling floor. How you feel about a guy's ceiling versus their floor. If you want upside, Joe Adele is your guy. If you want steady production, it's Brian De La Cruz for me.
Yeah, Todd. Sarah brings up a great point with Adele, but she didn't bring up that he's out of options. Like, he is only really on this roster because the Angels were like, I don't know if we can, like, really DFA him and put him out there because someone's going to gobble him up. De La Cruz has two options. Do you think that if, like, Joe Adele kind of goes back into that little trough, do you think that the Angels will be like, okay, we have seen enough. We've exhausted his options, and he might get DFA'd?
Maybe. The difference, I think, is he's always had this upside. So going for the upside is nothing different. He's reduced the strikeout rate, making better swing. You said I'd be surprised if he fell back into the old ways. I'd be a little surprised. I think that's the difference. Before, you'd almost expect it. Now, he's shown me enough that I would be surprised. You'd be saying, you know, the argument then, well, you'd be dumb. You should have realized because it's happened before. Well, he's carrying it's a little bit higher than average, but a 25% strikeout rate is really good for him. The walk rate is in line. So I'm seeing other improvements other than just the hard hit rate that I would be a little bit surprised. The Angels last year, they did their sale, but that was because they tried to go for it and didn't work out. It's hard. I mean, if Adele absolutely craters, there's not going to be a heck of a whole lot of a market for him. So maybe a DFA, and if he makes it through waivers, you throw him down on the farm on the non-40-man designation and see if he gets hot again. But how many times can you trust that he gets hot? So they don't have a whole lot of options right now, do the Angels. They're almost forced. Even if Odell does start to go the other direction, start striking out more, they're almost forced to hope it turns around. Mickey Moniak, they've gone through that, and he's helped out. But, yeah, there's a chance. But I think that he's going to be on the roster now. I mean, this is an aside, but remember early as we went into last year, De La Cruz was on the roster bubble. Talk about the options. We weren't sure if he was going to make the team. And now we're talking about a very steady ball player. Now the third best hitter in the Marlins is kind of faint praise, but you know, whatever.
Yeah. That's really true. I totally, cause I had De La Cruz everywhere last year. And it was definitely an up and down ride, and I don't have him anywhere. And he's killing it for the Marlins, whatever that means. Sarah, do you have a rebuttal?
Not a rebuttal so much as like one final point that might be a reason to roster Brian De La Cruz over Joe Adell. But again, I think Todd and I fundamentally agree here. Like, if you're chasing upside, Joe Adell is the play. If you want a solid contributor who you feel safe with, probably Brian De La Cruz. Brian De La Cruz is hitting second for the Marlins. He's hitting right behind Jazz Chisholm and ahead of Josh Bell. That's a pretty nice spot. As protected as you can get in the Marlins lineup, that is where Brian De La Cruz is currently hitting. Joe Adell is still hitting seventh for the Angels, and that means he's going to get probably one fewer plate appearance at various points in time. He's sitting behind Logan Ohapi and ahead of Nico Goodrum, and I'm just not sure how much protection Nico Goodrum offers anyone. So, you know, if you're looking for like one extra plate appearance here or there, but frankly, this is all about upside versus floor, and I think that we've hashed that out. I would probably lean towards De La Cruz. I understand if somebody wants to lean towards Adell. I was not in on Adell in the bidding a couple of weeks ago, but I understood why people were. I just thought he was going to be way too pricey for a guy who I think could collapse next month.
Yeah, that's fair. And today I learned that Nico Goodrum is on the Angels. So
me too.
Yeah,
I looked it up.
Okay.
All right. Todd, do you ever, or have you already done your rebuttal? Are we done?
I think
with
I answered
one?
A question. I guess a quick rebuttal.
Yeah.
I go with the studies. I don't believe in the concept of protection. But that I know the concept of getting more at bats in the seven hole. I wish Odell was better than 7 for 12 with stealing. I don't mind the seventh, eighth, ninth hitters as much if I'm getting there for stolen bases, because you steal as much from down there as you do up top. I just wish his percent success rate was better than, you know, getting caught 5 times out of 12 chances. That's something I hope he can fix. 92nd percent sprint speed. I don't think Ron Washington's the guy to teach him out here how to get the jumps at least anymore. But I'd like to see some improvement from Adell as far as that goes.
Good stuff. We are going to end the show the way we always end the show, with our love it or leave it. But before we do that, Todd, remind people where they can find you, what you're working on, and where they can follow you on the socials.
Okay, so Masters Ball is home base. A little late now. I do have in-season stuff, but, you know, it's mainly a draft prep site, kind of a companion site. I do my work for rotowire.com a couple pieces a week, and the rankings we do there, and on podcast, some behind-the-scenes stuff. I do stuff for ESPN in front of the firewall. I work with our buds Kristen Cockcroft and Eric Carabel. We tag team the Daily Notes. That's on the free side of things. Every morning we post what you need to know that day. And every day I kind of do a rundown of what happened the day before and or what you may have missed the day before. As Sarah mentioned, SiriusXM weekends. At least if you're going back and listening to this after July 4th, sorry, you're going to hear football. But at least until July 4th, they let me on the radio Saturday and Sunday, 1 p.m. Saturday with Eric Alterman, Sunday with Jeff Erickson, and 1 to 3 p.m. ET. And then Saturdays, I'm on MLB Network Radio with Eric. And that's a blast. I mean, I'm not trained in this. Just they give me a mic, and I've still been a few years. I'm still trying to learn. It's just, you know, I being on the radio, it's kind of cool. But anyway, and then Fantasy Index, I do a free piece for Fantasy Index. There will be some news coming out of that front by the end of the year, and looking forward to continuing my relationship with those fine folks.
Awesome. Todd's stuff is great and everywhere, and please follow along if you're not. What are you even doing? He's got such great advice for all of your fantasy baseball needs on a ton of different channels. We are going to end this show the way we always do, our love it or leave it. One thing from baseball news this week that we are super into or over. Todd, you get the first crack at this because you're our guest.
I may not be invited back after this because it's going to reference a couple of things that may not have been said during this podcast, but words mean things. And at this point, I'm tapping out. I'm done trying to teach people what the words mean. If you want to call it the quarter pole right now, fine. It's a quarter mile left in the race. It's not a quarter into the race. But if you want to keep calling this point of the season the quarter pole, go for it. My blood pressure's already, it's already too high. Sarah, I'm speaking with you here. If you want to keep saying a player is scuffling, fine. The word has now changed. At least it's accepted that scuffled means a player's not playing well. Look up any dictionary. There's no reference to that as a meaning, but it's used so much that it's accepted. And I just get to get over myself, get off my lawn, staring at the clouds. Scuffled means a player's not playing well. Blood pressure's already too high. Control and command. You guys didn't use this, thankfully, but announcers, they get paid a lot of money. They should know that if you can't throw strikes, it's bad control. It's not bad command. But if you can't locate within the zone, it's not you don't have control. You don't have command. Get it right. There's a difference. You get paid. Get it right. Wait, I'm getting upset. No, I don't care anymore. Blood pressure's up. No. Getting back down. I think that's about it. I'm getting blood pressure's high enough. Calm down. It's fine. I know what you mean. Chill out.
I mean, fair enough. Words do mean things for sure. And I find that words mean what people use them to communicate. And most people know what you're trying to
communicate. And that's a generational thing. And I agree.
That is a generational thing for sure. Also, this was like a very Andy Rooney moment for Fantasy Feud. And I'm here for it. That was good stuff, Todd. I love it. Shelley, what is your love it or leave it this week?
Yeah, like when I first started podcasting, because I had trouble with the command and control thing, I used to have like a sticky note on my monitor. So I would always look at it to be like, which one is it? So I feel for that. Like I tried to be better at it, even though I still always like take a step back and be like, which one am I trying to say? But yeah, so my love it or leave it, I'm going to go with a love it. It's Julia Morales and Ginny Kavnar. So they both work for, well, Julia works for the Astros and Ginny works for the A's. And last night, so Monday, when you're listening back to this, they were both play-by-play announcers for their respective teams. And that was the first time that it's ever happened in like a regular season game. And I thought it was great. But what also made it nice is they brought their daughters along to the game. And I don't know if they bring their daughters along to the game to like every single game. I doubt that they do. But they just had like the Astros Twitter account had like this cute picture of both Julia and Jenny and both of their daughters. And they're just there. And it's just like, just seeing any type, just women in baseball, I absolutely love to see it. And especially like, just having little kids at baseball, seeing parents being like, this is what I do for work. It's baseball. It's great. I absolutely love to see it. It just, you know, it was just like, oh yeah, that's great. And it was like the day after Mother's Day too. So yeah, it was just a really awesome, like little thing to see.
Aw, I missed that. I'm going to go back and look at this. This is amazing.
Yeah.
My love it this week is, I'm such a nerd, y'all. The new StatCast swing metrics, all of the charts and the graphs and the lines and trying to figure out whether when a long swing is good and when a short swing is good and when a fast swing is good and when a slow swing is good and looking at these comparisons. And yes, I am super hyped that Christopher Morel is in like the company of Aaron Judge and Juan Soto and like some great, like incredible talent on some of these metrics. And I love data. I love what we can measure in this game. It's wild to me. I think back to when I first started playing fantasy baseball, when I first was looking at players and trying to figure things out. And we didn't have TrackMan. We didn't have Hawkeye. It was just kind of like the hotness was whether you were using on base percentage or average, right? Like, were you fancy enough to understand that it was better to be on base versus whether or not you got a hit in a given time? And now we know how much your curveball spins versus how much your fastball spins and whether that means that you're cheating or not. I just think it's incredible. I love data. I love what all of these teams are measuring. And I love it when it confirms what I can see with my own eyes, which is that Christopher Morel is an incredible player and he's got, the sky is the limit. And for every person, and here's my moment of Andy Rooney to end this show, there's a lot of people out there right now lumping Christopher Morel into the he just strikes out too much category. And I beg you, go look at his strikeout rate from 2024, because the dude is striking out like 21% of the time. His strikeout rate is down 9 points from where it was his first two times through the league. And if he keeps that up and walks at a 12% clip, we are looking at a special player, y'all, and I am here for it.
Yeah, I have him in a lot of leagues basically because, you know, we started doing this podcast together. So I'm hoping in like 2 to 3 years, Zidane Raffaella will be the same way.
Zidane Raffaella, Johan Rojas, these are all my guys. And they all have the same problem, but I trust them to figure it out.
I mentioned Eric Halterman. I do the pod and the radio show with him. Sarah, as much as you said Morel, Halterman said it like three times as much as you've already said it. It took you an hour and a half, I think, before you mentioned him once. Eric's like 30 seconds in. And it's like, we have no Christopher Morel news today. In other accounts, Mike Trout is hurt. So anyway.
Eric Halterman and I rode with Maddie Davis over to the Glarf draft. And right, we may have talked about Christopher Morel for like 3 hours of this 5 hour
trip. I'm actually checking to see if he's in the lineup tonight. He hurt his toe, right?
He's in the lineup.
Oh, he's DHing. Yep, he's in the lineup.
He's okay. DHing, and he got hit by a pitch on his toe, his first at bat. And I'm really annoyed at Chris Sale for this because I just need everybody to keep Christopher Morel healthy. So I think he's still in the game, but he was kind of limping his way to first base, and I'm not happy about it.
I'm not going to say Sale aimed for the toe. I think, but I'm not going to say he didn't either. No.
Okay, look, I live in Chicago. I'm well aware of Chris Sale. I also like am a Red Sox fan, and I love Chris Sale, and I think he aimed for the toe. I was like, that was deliberate.
I don't think so.
Chris anyway. On Chris Crime.
Chris on Chris. Yeah, exactly. Chris on Chris Crime. This was so fun, Todd. Thank you again for joining us, y'all. Please check out Masters Ball. Please check out all of Todd's great work at RotoWire, at ESPN Fantasy Index, and on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it these days. I'm still calling it Twitter because why not? This was an incredible show. Shelley, what are you doing these days on the old social media? Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at ShelleyV_643. I tweet a little bit about baseball stuff, but I don't know. Honestly, I've just been hanging out, just watching baseball. It's been just nice to just watch baseball instead of write about it. I've kind of gotten like my fandom back a little bit. I'm still not really able to watch the Red Sox home broadcast anymore. Again, I have a dog named Orsillo, so we know why. But yeah, I'm starting to get my fandom back. So that's cool.
Orsillo is the best. And I'm still cranky about that too. I lived in Boston during the Orsillo days, and yeah, that could be a whole podcast all of its own. And we would definitely have Todd back for that one, because I imagine you have some things to say there.
Well, actually, you know what? I mean, love Jerry Remy. I think he's got just a good rapport with Mudcat now. And I think that's it just shows you how good Orsillo is.
Yeah.
Shelly, I can turn my camera around and put it to the TV. If you want it, we can zoom or something like that. I mean, we could probably figure that out. During commercials, I may flip to flip to other things. We can probably work that out.
Yeah.
You should follow Shelly for her great baseball takes. You should follow Todd and all of the great work he's doing. You can follow me at @BCB_Sarah everywhere except Blue Sky, where they don't allow underscores. So I'm @BCB_Sarah there. We will be back next week helping you with all of the debates that can help your fantasy baseball teams this season. Until then.